Welcome to Module 5, Vision, Reading, and Dyslexia.
So what you're going to find as you begin looking at eye movements, and particularly in the school-based system, you're going to find and identify children that have dyslexia. As I've started to learn about dyslexia, the lack of awareness of the frequency of dyslexia, how it looks, I have had to explain to two elementary school teachers that their children are dyslexic. Even your teachers that you're working with in an elementary environment may not be aware of what dyslexia actually looks like. So let's talk about that. Let's get into the slides and help you guys find dyslexia a little bit more efficiently.
Awesome. I want to just chime in and say, in the last 4 years, I have found that my caseload has become almost exclusively children with dyslexia. I'm working a lot more in the assistive technology space. And because of that, the children who have such severe reading difficulties are being referred to me. And I do find in the older ages, in middle school and high school, there does seem to be a little bit more of an awareness. But either way, as school OTs, we are often the first line of defense and the first people who can really kind of differentiate and tease out besides the reading specialist. So this is definitely a really important module, and I'm glad that Robert's here to share all of his wonderful knowledge.
The first question we have is, what is dyslexia in general? There's even confusion about this. So the DSM-5 does not contain a diagnosis for dyslexia. So when we send a child to neuropsychology to get a reading disorder diagnosed, what they frequently come back with is a specific learning disorder affecting reading. So this is what's defined in the DSM-5. There is a very specific diagnostic criteria for this. So while dyslexia is not a vision problem, dyslexia is a problem of phonetic processing, children with dyslexia do have documented vision issues. They will, about half of them, have problems of accommodation, of near vision focusing. About 62% are going to have problems with tracking or accurate saccades and fixations as they're scanning down a line of text. Their eye movements during reading are frequently very inaccurate. 34% have vergence problems, and 79% have had at least one. So I've seen this clinically, where I'm being sent children to figure out, are they having a vision problem? Are they having an ocular motor or near vision focusing problem? Or are they having dyslexia? And what I'm finding is, in almost all the cases I get, they're having both. But I have had a few children that are having purely problems of dyslexia. So reading is sort of a tricky thing. We are hardwired to process sound into language. We have hardware specifically designed to do that. We have our ears that convert vibrations in the air into electrical signals that our brain takes and interprets into language. Reading is not, we're not hardwired to read. Reading is a man-made, a human-made invention. And so it's something that has to be taught. And we need to have very specific areas of brain working efficiently in order for that to happen. The heart of dyslexia is a disconnect between the symbol and the sound the symbol makes. So these children are having a difficult time attaching the sound to the symbol. But what we find when we look a little deeper at kids with dyslexia is they're having a bigger problem, not just beyond the sound of the symbol, but attaching any value to the symbol beyond its shape, right? Reading acquisition requires the brain to abstract away from the visual forms of written words to access spoken language. The abstraction requires encoding distinctive information about each visual symbol. This is the heart of dyslexia. It's applying these intangible values to these squiggles, right? So our friends know some squiggles. They know about a square and they know about a circle. And suddenly we show the word A. We show them the letter A and we tell them this is called an A. And they go, okay. And they would say, so it also says ah. And they're like, okay, that's cool. I can accept that A, apple, ah, pretty cool. And then we get to B and we go, this is a B. This is what a B looks like. And like, this is an uppercase B and this is a lowercase B. And they go, wait a minute. So if it's facing this way, it's a B. If it's facing this way, it's something different. I'm not comfortable with that yet, but I will accept that this squiggle makes the sound B, I guess. And then we get to the letter C and we get cat and we get church and we get the word sent.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, this letter C has all of these other values, far beyond even that weird, it's facing this way, it's a B facing this way, it's a D sort ofness. So at the heart of dyslexia is a difficulty in attaching a value beyond this shape of the letter. So the letter A, the letter W, have the same value as a square. And what sound does a square make? Well, a sound, the square doesn't make a sound. What sound?
I really love that example, Robert, because I think as adults, we just expect children to just innately gather this information and absorb it and get it. And when you really spell it out like that, you're right. There's lowercase a, there's capital A. They both say ah or e or ah. I mean, and even when it comes to writing, there's not 26 letters. There's not 52 letters either, because W and W are the same, but is it big? Is it small? There's just so much that we're expecting children to just absorb when it comes to the written language. So I think that example you gave was really eye-opening.
So we can look at this, right? And you've had these kiddos before, right? You hold up an L, and you go, oh, this is an L, and we make an L with Play-Doh, we make an L with a pipe cleaner, and we draw an L, and we shape an L, and we talk about lions and lemons and la 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 la, right? And then we get a K, and we draw a K, and we trace a K, and we make a K with pipe cleaner, and we make a K with Play-Doh, and we talk about kites and kangaroos, and then we hold the L back up, and we say, what is this? And what do they tell us? I don't know. So the first time you see this, I remember the first time I saw this, I was just baffled. Like, are you kidding me right now? We just spent 15 minutes talking about this and poof, it's gone.
Right.
So they had retained none of the qualities of what this squiggle was, right? And we see these. So so the letters have additional qualities beyond the shape. That is processed in the left ventral occipitotemporal cortex, where these symbols, where this visual input has to be converted to sounds in order to become language. That area where that conversion happens is we can do an MRI and say, here's the part. We can look at a functional MRI and go, here's the part where the dyslexia is. We can circle it in the brain and go, this part is supposed to be firing, but in this dyslexic person, this part is not firing where they're attempting to read. So it is about this conversion of symbols into language. And we're hardwired for speech. We can hear these things and we have hardware there specifically designed, but reading has to be learned. Reading has to be taught. So as we're attempting to figure out what is dyslexia and what does it mean when we see these words, our school system here, in order to trigger that neuropsych evaluation through the school system, a child has to fail for a year. So not make D's, not struggle. They have to fail for a year. And then there's a long process where roughly a year and a half later, they'll be seen by a neuropsychologist to figure out the root cause of their reading disorder. And what they frequently come back with is specific learning disorder affecting reading. So these persistent, so here's the diagnostic criteria for this, because this becomes important when we talk about the definition of dyslexia. So there are persistent difficulties in reading, writing, or arithmetic. They are unable to perform academically at a level appropriate to their intelligence and their age. I will tell you that dyslexic children are absolutely brilliant. First, they are masters of problem solving. They frequently get themselves through years of school using elaborate strategies to hide the fact that they cannot read or spell. I will also tell you that they have the most amazing engineer brains. I've seen 6 and 7 year olds attack 500 piece Lego puzzles, Lego boxes, and build the Enterprise and the whole thing. So amazingly brilliant, amazingly smart children. That's part of what makes this absolutely crazy as we start talking about these kids in a school context, right? How can they be this bright and they don't remember what the letter L is?
Right.
So it's kind of crazy. Everyone involved. We can go a step further and go, you know what? They're fantastic at math, unless we give them a word problem. And then when we give them a word problem, all of a sudden, we're not all that great at math anymore.
Right.
Because now we have to read. So these are two of those diagnostic criteria. Let's keep going.
I just want to say, I have a student who sticks out to me. He's such the perfect example of a child with dyslexia. But one thing that's amazing about him is it's almost like anything that's presented to him visually doesn't matter. But auditorily, this kid is amazing. His IQ is average and he's doing all right in school because he's completely relying on his auditory system. And he can repeat back to the teacher verbatim what she just said. The problem becomes when it's like, okay, now he's trying to then speech to text what she said and she's going on. Like there's where OTs mm-hmm. can kind of get in there and really evaluate the environment and the task and how can we help? Besides, like, yes, it's almost one of those things where they say, if you lose one system, your other system gets stronger.
Right.
I don't know if you've seen this, Robert, but I have a few students like that. One in particular that is just like, it's his superpower.
So this definition of specific learning disorder doesn't take in, it captures any problem that's causing this extended reading difficulty inconsistent with their level of intelligence. So it would include things like phonetic issues, vision-based issues, auditory processing-based issues that can affect reading performance, although not strictly being limited to what dyslexia truly is. So this is part of the gripe from the dyslexia folks, is this specific learning disorder affecting reading is much too broad and it doesn't respect the true cause of dyslexia. So here is the definition from the International Dyslexia Association. Neurobiological in origin. There are difficulties with accurate and fluent word recognition and by poor spelling and decoding abilities. There is a deficit in the phonological component of language, unexpected in relation to other cognitive abilities. So this really whittles that funnel down to talking about the phonological deficits, those difficulties in sounding out an unknown word. That's something we're going to be coming back to a couple times. Let's hop over to the next one. So these kiddos do have issues within their visual system. They are having some problems with the visual system, particularly dorsal stream issues, where if you can sort of imagine they're reading through a tube kind of, right? They're not getting good input here from their dorsal stream. So maybe they're not seeing that whole word, but instead only seeing the first letter or two. So because of this sort of dorsal stream seeing the words through a tube, they may not recognize that the word is made up of separate parts. So this is another common characteristic of dyslexia when the kids want the word to be like a picture, right? So we can talk about the example I've seen is when we see a mouse, we just go, hey, that's a mouse. And we don't talk about the pieces of the mouse, even though, yes, a mouse is made of pieces, but we just talk about, hey, that's a mouse, right? So the dyslexic brain wants a word to be like a mouse. It's just a picture. And that failure to recognize that there are pieces that make up the word, that we can remove the pieces. Though that early exercise in first grade where we take cat and we change the first letter to a B and it becomes bat, and then mat, and then sat. Those sort of exercises that teach that a word is made up of pieces are very important in developing those reading skills. But if you're only seeing the word through a little tiny tube, then you don't see the rest of the pieces, right? So there's common spatial issues, and I'll tell you, I see this a great deal in my clinic as well. It's easy for us to talk about left and right because we're talking about letter reversals, and this one needs to be up, and this one needs to be down. And this is on the left and this is on the right, et cetera, et cetera. For a dyslexic child, sometimes this becomes bigger than simply talking about left and right and up and down, where there is almost like a prepositional deficit, where we see kids that when we say things like, put this in the middle, put this next to that. So middle is a word, we can show someone what a dog is, right? We can show you a picture of a dog. This is a dog. And these squiggles mean dog. When it comes to middle, unless we make a pretty big effort to draw a picture explaining middle, then middle becomes a concept of space that's attached to this series of squiggles that are very hard to visualize. So now suddenly the language that we're using to talk about letter reversals, when we're saying this one goes on the top, and this goes on the bottom, and this goes left, and this goes right, those sort of spatial words become difficult for the dyslexic child to visualize. So we're back to having an intangible value to a word that's very difficult to demonstrate. So I will see those spatial issues pretty commonly in the children I see with dyslexia as well. So what does this look like when we see a dyslexic child attempt to read? The thing we're familiar with and the thing that is frequently sort of triggering the consult is they're skipping words and lines while they're reading. Their reading may be generally slow and inaccurate with reduced fluency. That's not uncommon, but that's not uncommon in visual dysfunction either. The next thing that we see is decoding difficulties. When there's a word that they do not recognize, when there's a word that they do not have converted into a sight word, then sounding out this word becomes very difficult. There'll be difficulties with blending letters like ST or TH. You'll hear as they're attempting to sound out the letters that they're not attaching the appropriate sound to that letter as they're trying to sound it out, and they can't blend those sounds together. So there's difficulty sounding out unknown words, difficulty learning the alphabet. So we talked about this a little bit ago. Dr. Sally Shaywitz's book, Overcoming Dyslexia, this is sort of the book on dyslexia. She talks about how the child that gets out of kindergarten without knowing the entire alphabet, this is the earliest little whisper that we need to be watching this child for potentially being dyslexic. The other thing she says along that line is these children don't catch up. So if we get out of kindergarten without knowing the alphabet, then we're not going to catch up and transition into learning sounds and sight words and those sort of things in first grade. They stay behind.
Yeah.
Is it an issue of visual memory? It's hard to say why it is. I will tell you when I've done visual perception tests on my dyslexic kids, I do see where there are sequential memory issues. There are form consistency issues. There are visual discrimination issues. Visual discrimination is probably the most common.
I also have had students with dyslexia where I've been almost like floored by how amazing their sequential memory is. And the TVPS, you know, they have that really long one where they're remembering all these different shapes. And I had this one student that was able to remember a string of like 10 random shapes in a row, but he could not write the alphabet. And I just was like, that's just...
So I'll tell you about that. So the other thing, so let's pretend there's 140 bubbles of potential signs of dyslexia.
Okay.
When a kiddo has 120 of them, it's pretty easy to spot. When they have six, it gets really, really tricky. And they may randomly have 12 of these potential symptoms. So I've had kids with such an amazing memory for sight words that I've had to go to a college level as I'm trying to figure out how good are they at sight words. Now they have no strategy to sound out a word. And they can't spell those sight words at all, but they have memorized a huge list of words that allow them to make their way through reading. So that's with some of the kids as well. This is very, very much like here's 10 over here. We have 10 dyslexic kiddos and they do this. And then this group over here, they're doing entirely different things that are also rooted in dyslexia. So yes, I've seen where they do have at the same time this amazing memory for extensive lists of sight words, but they can't spell any of them.
It's like they have some other superpower to compensate.
So there's some common speech difficulties in our dyslexic friends as well. So because we're having a hard time converting the symbols to language, there's frequently reduced retrieval cues for finding a word. So you may find that our dyslexic friends are using a lot of sort of trash words, things like unlike, to sort of stall while they're thinking of the correct word. These kids may frequently be getting speech, or in the past were getting speech, either for phonetic awareness or for articulation. Here's one of the other things I've noticed with dyslexic kids. If they can't say the sound, then they have a very difficult time attaching that sound to the symbol. So I had a child with a great deal of articulation problems and she was getting speech. She was struggling a whole lot with reading. And they were sent to me to figure out, is there a visual component to this? Is this dyslexia or something else? And so I did assess her. And while she showed a number of signs of dyslexia, and I did refer her for dyslexia assessment, it was unclear, was her reading issues related to her articulation problems, or were those things true developmental dyslexia? Interestingly enough, when the dyslexia assessor took a look at her, she said the same thing. You know, she said, yes, we can help, our intervention will help her, but I'm not sure it's purely what we would call dyslexia, or if this is a problem associated with her articulation issues. We may hear problems with mispronouncing words, things like enemy instead of enemy, or basketti. We may hear those sort of things. So that reduced word retrieval may manifest itself as expressing the meaning of the, but not actually reading the word. So I have a device here in my room, and it's called the QuickBoard, and it says on the device, QuickBoard. And one of my kiddos says, hey, Mr. Robert, are we ever going to do the fast board? So this was a dyslexic child. So he got the meaning of the word, but didn't actually read it. And you may see this again when kiddos start to read. The sentence may be, the bright red truck went down the avenue, but the child says the red car went down the street. So we sort of get the meaning of what's happening, but they certainly aren't actually reading the words. This is something else that can happen with dyslexia as well, are these speech problems. So let's take a look. This is an assessment I use. This is called the Dyslexia Determination Test. It's something of a screener that tells me, that gives me cues if this child needs to have additional assessment down dyslexia, or is there something else happening here? So the first thing you do with the Dyslexia Determination Test is they have to write the uppercase, the lowercase letter, and the numbers 1 through 10. So let's see how my friend did here. We have A, B, C. We have a backwards D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L. He doesn't like the letter M. N, O, P, Q, R, S, T, U, V, W, X, Y, backwards Z. So not bad. We have a backwards letter. We have a missing letter. Here we have, we got B and D correct. E, F, we have an uppercase G. H, I, J, K, L. See that? I don't know why. So this is something very interesting. I have a child right now I'm working with who will forget the letter in V every single time, no matter the context, Q, R, S, T, W, X, Y, Z. She will forget the U and V every single time, no matter what we're doing, we're working on it. So we're missing an M, N, O, P. We have uppercase P, not sure what's happening there with the Q, R, S, T, U, V, W, X, Y, Z. We'll look at the numbers, 1, 2, 3, backwards 9, and a 10. So as I'm looking at this, I'm looking at some other things as well. Yes, I'm looking for confusion about upper and lowercase letters. I'm looking about confusion of missing letters or letters out of order. So I'm also looking at how's the spacing of the letters? Are they the same size? Are they sitting on the line or are they floating about? Is the spacing between the letters irregular? So for me, it was interesting. Last weekend, I was in California doing this course and I showed this. This is a fourth grader. I showed this to a room full of school-based therapists, and there I was like, so this is spacing errors, the sort of things that I look for as an indication that there is something of a visual component. And all of the school-based therapists were like, that's pretty good compared to what we see on a regular basis. That's not a bad handwriting sample. It's not bad. I have also seen some that are a hot mess. Mm-hmm. So the next part of the dyslexia determination test is, they're going to read a list of words and you have to decide, did they sight read those words or did they sound out those words? So these were all sight recognized words. They are phonetically irregular sight recognized words. So they were able to read all these words. Let's see how they did spelling them. So we have green, we have look, we have said, have who. So here we see something very common about the sounds being in the wrong order. You'll see this commonly with it when a dyslexic child attempts to phonetically spell a word. The word here, now we see that H-E-L, so we have the wrong letter for the sound, right? We have people. We once again have those sounds out of order. And we have an E on the end. You know why they put an E on the end? because some words end in E. So that's the strategy for sometimes we just throw a random E on the end of there. So you'll see that in spelling errors as well. We got just, we got fast, we got hip. So we're back again to we have the wrong letter representing the sound and we did stop. So this other side is about attempting to phonetically spell unknown words. So here's their attempt at other, guess, funny, does. We're back to, the wrong letters again. Listened, very phonetically spelt. Uncle, we have sounds missing here, right? Business, not bad. Believe, we have sound missing here. And this would be their attempt at spelling lamp. So this is a child with what we would call a mixed type dyslexia. We referred them for further assessment. So these are some of the errors we'll see. Let's take a look at the next one.
Robert, can I ask you a question about the dyslexia test? What is it called again?
It's called the dyslexia determination test.
Okay. And is this a test that a school-based OT would normally give? Or is that, do you give it as a vision professional? Or is it something that a reading specialist would most likely give? Because I had never heard of this test before.
So all of those and none of those.
Okay.
All at the same time. And that's sort of the problem. That's why we're not doing a good job of identifying these kiddos is because, right. Yes, an OT can give this. Yes, a vision professional can give this. Yes, a reading interventionist can give this. But not a lot of people at all are giving this.
Well,
so
that's why
we're missing these kiddos.
In the school setting, and I'm not sure how it is in like Florida compared to New York, but in the school setting, we do not diagnose dyslexia, of course.
Right.
And we don't give any tests that have the word dyslexia in them, let's say. We definitely do give tests that give us scores in certain areas that are indicators that the child may be dyslexic, but there's a very widespread hesitance to call a student dyslexic. And I think it's one of those things where it goes back to opening the floodgates of everyone being dyslexic and the district having to pay for all this specialized reading service and, all of those concerns that administrators may have. But when it comes down to it, like, this is my kid and I need to help my kid.
Absolutely. So that is Dr. Shaywitz's research, and consistently over the years has shown that about 20% of kids are dyslexic.
Wow.
20%. So we know how to teach reading to a dyslexic child with the same evidence that we know how to treat an ear infection. Okay. It's not a guess. It is absolutely, there is evidence-based reading techniques for teaching every child how to read.
Right.
And for whatever reason, mostly the cabbage, right? Those things are not happening like they need to be happening.
Right.
And so, yes, in a lot of school systems, you can't say the D word. Meanwhile, this 20% of kids are struggling.
Yeah.
So here's another strategy here. So we'll see some of these. This was an older kiddo. This was, he was in seventh grade. And I had to go to a college level. This is the kiddo I was telling you about that had such an amazing memory for sight recognized words. So let's take a look at his alphabet. A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P, Q, R, S, T, U, V, W, X, Y, Z. So they're all here as well. And we got our numbers and they're all facing the right direction. So his spacing is nice. His letter size is nice. That's looking pretty good. So let's take a look at the words that he was able to recognize. So these are, again, phonetically irregular, sight-recognized words that he needs to spell. So here's how he did height, doubt, position, vowed, delight, familiar, sword, rough, glisten, badge. So what we see here are we are phonetically spelling sight recognized words, right? So let's see how we did up here when it was time to phonetically spell these unrecognized words. Conceited, foreign, varnish, heinous, digit, prevalent, exonerate. So he is not as bad as phonetically spelling those words, right? So this is a type of dyslexia that might be called dysaiatic dyslexia or surface-based dyslexia. So this is a little different. So let's take a look at the next one. So this young lady is in fourth grade, and the letters she wrote are, she actually wrote A, B, and then started crying.
Oh.
Because she didn't know the letters. She wasn't the only one. I've had a half a dozen kids as high as sixth grade come in and attempt to write their alphabet. And because there's no cues in my room, they don't know the alphabet.
Why are you always making these little kids cry, Robert? That's so mean.
So you have watched me talk about a lot of things, and you have never watched me talk about anything as passionately as I talk about my dyslexic kids. This is for these kids, it's not a reading problem by the time we get to third and fourth grade. Now, this is a problem of self-esteem. There are behaviors that are happening to avoid reading. These kids are anxious. I've had them on medication for anxiety. They may be getting bullied because they're suddenly looking around and all of their friends can do this and they can't.
Right.
So this explodes into something that's much, much bigger than a reading problem. And it is. It's why I talk so much about it now. I always said if I ever looked under the dyslexia rock, because language and how we talk and those sort of things fascinate me anyway. And when I started doing a deep dive into dyslexia, it's absolutely fascinating. And when I see these kids in front of me, what I realize is by third grade and up, it's not a reading problem anymore. It is a psychosocial problem that's affecting every aspect of their life. So this young lady recently adapted this strategy of writing very, very small, so folks couldn't tell that she couldn't spell. This was all the words she was able to recognize, which was below her grade average, and she wasn't able to spell those either. So it's much bigger. It becomes much bigger than simply a reading issue. So what do we do? How do we spot this the most quickly, most efficiently? So have a look at their spelling test. Have a look at writing samples. It's not if they got the word right or wrong. Look at how they went about attempting to spell the word. Did they attempt to spell the word phonetically? Did they use the correct letters to represent the sounds? And are those sounds in the correct order? Have them write the alphabet. In a school, there are alphabets all over everywhere. And
Absolutely.
Your dyslexic child knows where every single one of them are. It was interesting. I had a kiddo, and when I moved to this room, I initially had a rug in the room that had the letters around the circumference of the thing. And it was one of kiddo I was screening for dyslexia. So I'm giving him the assessment. I'm like, I want you to write the uppercase letters for me. And so he writes A, B, and then he starts hunting in the room and he sees the rug. So I'm watching this and I'm like, wow, this is how they survive. This is their survival skills. So I covered the rug up. He didn't say anything. He didn't say like, hey, don't take that away. He looked around.
Yeah, but you don't know what he was thinking about you in his head.
Oh no, I do. I know.
I actually have a resource in my website where I actually have a resource on my website that I encourage school-based OTs to use to progress monitor students' handwriting and letter formations and letter sounds. And one of the big things I say is make sure that there's no letters around, because it is the same thing for handwriting. Students that are just learning handwriting, we tell them, make sure you look around, use your visual cues. But usually those visual cues are around much longer than they should be needed.
Oh, listen to them read. Listen to how they go about managing a word that they don't recognize, managing an unknown word. The reading specialist will actually have them attempt to sound out nonsense words because now there's no cues for those. So seeing how they go about decoding the words can also give you some insight into, is this dyslexia or is this another issue that's happening? And we will continue.
So for school-based occupational therapists, you may be unsure which of your students actually are dyslexic or have reading issues. Very often, this information is not necessarily on the IEP. They may not be diagnosed with dyslexia. This means that they didn't have the neuropsych. They didn't have that very in-depth, very expensive evaluation to get a word on their IEP. That doesn't mean that we can't use our OT detective skills to figure it out. First of all, always ask your team members, ask the reading teacher, ask the classroom teacher, even the speech and language therapist can have really valuable information for you. You want to look on the student's IEP. In New York, we call it the SPAMS. Some school districts call it the PLEPS. Whatever it is, it's in that section of the IEP where you're figuring out where the student is exactly in terms of their physical, their academic, and their management, and what their needs are. Read that thoroughly, and especially the reading and writing area, because it will give you some really interesting and informative information that will help you to help your student. Under test scores, you can also look in the intelligence testing. Look for the subtests of broad reading, pseudo word decoding, sentence reading fluency, and oral reading fluency. Look at those percentiles. If those percentiles are staggeringly low, where the student has a normal IQ, that's a good indication that your student may be really struggling in the area of reading. Did you want to say something?
Yeah, you guys have fun words. You got your SPAMS and your PLEPS. That sounds like a party right there.
Here are some common accommodations that may or may not benefit your student. These are very individualized, and you really do have to trial them with each student to determine if it helps and if it makes a difference. Font size 14 to 16 point should be helpful. You want to increase the spacing in the lines of the text that you give your student whenever possible. So as OTs, we're not necessarily assigning work to our students, but this is great information for you to share with your classroom teachers who have students that are struggling with reading. Letter spacing increase as much as possible, or 35% is usually recommended. And the best fonts for students with reading difficulties are Arial, Verdana, and Roboto. These are considered sans serif fonts. Definitely, when it gets to a certain age, you want to consider assistive technology for your student. It gives them even playing field when it comes to reading and writing. And occupational therapists are often the people who are implementing that assistive technology. So don't be afraid to recommend an assistive technology referral if you think that it may help your student to produce and participate in their classroom curriculum. One of the really good strategies for students who are struggling with tracking is to have them have a reading ruler or a finger to track the text. When the student is on their Chromebook, there are also programs that will provide a screen masking. For example, I use the program ReadWrite with a lot of my students, and there's an option on there to provide a screen mask, which will blank out a significant portion of what the student's reading and reduce the visual clutter for them. So these are some simple accommodations that you can try to help your students who are struggling with reading. Some of the assistive technology things to consider are speech to text, using dark contrast. Some students really prefer this. Dyslexic font. There's not a ton of research to support dyslexic font, but there's a lot of anecdotal research, adults reporting that they can read much more comfortably when they have that font. I always offer it to my students. I have them read something or look at something in the dyslexic font as compared to a regular font. And most of them have a very strong opinion whether they like it or not. So I let them choose. And if they want it, that's fine. Word prediction is a wonderful, wonderful tool. It depends on the student. If the student has enough reading skills to recognize a word that's spelled correctly, they can look at a list of words that are popping up for them and choose the correct word. This eliminates the difficulty for them of having to generate the spelling from their brain. But for our students whose spelling is so impaired that they wouldn't even recognize the word if it was in front of them, obviously this isn't going to be a great choice, and it may increase their frustration. Predictive text is becoming more and more common as AI infuses its way into our school. And this, again, can be another great tool for students who can hit, yes, that's what I want to say. Our problem becomes when we have students that hit yes, 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 yes to everything the computer is suggesting, and it's not necessarily what they wanted to say, and it may not grammatically make sense. So if you're using assistive technology with that student, you then have to do the extra step of making sure that they are actually listening to everything that they agreed to. That's a hard thing to get them to do. Text to speech is just what I said. There are tools such as ReadWrite, like I mentioned before, where the student can hit play and then listen to what they either typed, they speech to text, or they agreed to with using their AI tools. Many times the school-based occupational therapist is not really that involved in a student's reading. We may not have the time to be aware or involved in the classroom when it comes to reading. We can look at the IEP, yes, but we don't necessarily have the time to plan and generate lessons that involve reading. I've been using AI, and this quick trick has really helped me to create plans, assistive technology lesson plans, and occupational therapy treatment activities quickly and easily that are motivating for my students. So I'll go into whatever AI tool I'm using. Generally, it's Google Gemini. And I'll just say, give me one paragraph on and whatever the student's favorite topic is. Roblox. I don't even know the video games. I'm such a bad person. Give me one paragraph on dinosaurs. Give me one paragraph on, even for my older students, how to become a hotel management employee, whatever it is. And then you have to insert their reading level. What their reading level is should be in the PLEPS or the SPAMS of the student's IEP. So you want to make sure that you're not giving them something on the 10th grade level if they're reading on a third grade level. So I'll go in and I'll just say, give me one paragraph on a third grade reading level on the topic of filling out a resume, for example. And then I'll ask it to please create this font, make the spacing this big. And then I have the student read it. And this gives me something to work on with my student, whether I'm using it for assistive technology or handwriting or anything within my OT session. It's quick, easy, and I don't have to do the work to reach out to the teacher and get something or have them go through their binders to find something that's applicable. Any closing comments, Robert?
The way dyslexia is managed around the country is very different from one district to the next. The identifying these kids early and ideally getting them into the appropriate intervention to teach them how to read should be the goal for all of us, but it's not. And we need to get to a place where we recognize that even dyslexic children have to learn to read. So we need to be working a little harder to adapt the system so that every child can read. The way dyslexic readers learn to read is the evidence-based best way for all children to learn to read. So it's not like it's a special drawn-out sort of protocol because they're dyslexic. Instead, it is the best evidence-based way for all children to learn to read.
And I just want to add that as school-based occupational therapists, this can seem overwhelming. So now we've got to learn about vision, and now we've got to know about reading and dyslexia. What else more can we do? You don't need to be the dyslexia expert. You don't need to be the reading expert, but you do need to be aware. And you can be a really supportive part of the team. Always reach out to your team members, look at your student's IEP, and just be aware of what difficulties they may be having. As you're searching and identifying and assessing and treating these vision issues that we're teaching you, you've got to be aware that there may also be reading issues, or what you're seeing may be only reading issues, or it may be only vision issues. It's just a matter of keeping your eyes open, being aware of the symptoms, and doing everything we can to support our students.